Hey, everybody. We're back. This is Alex Lindsay and Mike Seymour. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Alex. How's things?
They're doing very well. They're warm here. Is it warm down there? Over there?
Look, I'd like to lie and say that it is. Actually, I'm looking out over a fairly bleak gray day down here in Sydney.
I really wish it would be bleak and gray down up here. It's very sunny and warm. And I'm not really into that. I'm into the layers. I'm into the drizzle. I'm into kind of Scottish weather myself. So I'm waiting for it to come back. I don't know what happened to it up here. So. Anyway, but we have, speaking of warm weather, we have a new movie to talk about, The Kingdom, which came out, I think, about 2 weeks ago. Is that right?
Yeah, I certainly, I think I saw it about a week or so ago. But yeah, it's about 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, and so this is it's Michael Mann, right, or producing?
Well, he's producing. The director is actually Peter Berg.
And what's Peter's background?
Well, it's actually pretty interesting. He was in Collateral as an actor. You might remember him from Chicago Hope, where he was one of the doctors.
No, right. Okay.
So he's actually a doctor in that show. Then, as an actor playing a doctor, they said, well, you want to direct an episode kind of thing.
Right.
And since then, he's gone on to direct films. He still acts. Obviously, that's why he was in Collateral. Mm. But yeah, no, he's now directed a few films.
I enjoyed the film. You know, I think that, you know, it got different reviews here and there, but I thought it was fairly well produced. Did you enjoy it?
I thought it was great. Yeah, and I thought it was really great.
I really felt like it moved well, and you know, I would suggest definitely seeing it. One of the things that I was astounded by. I just thought it was, just the incredible open for the movie.
Yes, it's definitely, if you like the film, don't arrive, if you want to go and see the film, sorry, don't arrive late and miss the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. It is some of the best use of just a mix. For me, that's we make a lot of, outside of what we do in visual effects, we do a lot of information graphics. so we do, you know, there's this little, when we make internet video and stuff like that, there's a lot of the stuff that we have to do and a lot of these animations that we have to put together. And watching it done really, really well. And this was done by, I believe, the PIC agency. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. And they've been going since 2005, though in actual, like as a team, they've been working together for longer than that. But yes, as a the PIC agency.
And you can actually go to their website, picagency.com, and they have the, if you look at The Kingdom, they actually have the open there. So if you want to watch it, you don't even need to go to the movie to see the open. You should go see the whole movie, but if you just want to get your get primed for it, it's there. And it's, you know, what's happening is that it really gives you this history in, I don't know how long it is. It's like 2 or 3 minutes long.
It's 3 minutes.
And in 3 minutes,
it's 128 shots in 3 minutes.
And it's just, yeah, it's this kind of Matrix style, we're going to shove all this information into your head really, really, really fast and fairly comfortably. And so what it does is it catches you up on the last 70 years or 80 years of, or 75 years of Saudi Arabian history and oil history and the interrelationship between the United States and oil and Saudi Arabia and everything else. Things that you have to understand or that make the movie much richer by having all that information in your head.
Actually, the thing that I found totally astounding, because I had a chance to talk to the guys at PIC Agency, is they, this is really going to knock you off, because they had only 4 meetings with the filmmakers, and they weren't given this script to make. They were given the task of, give us the backstory on Saudi, right? Like the designers themselves did the research. They tracked down the footage. They pieced together the jigsaw puzzle of what would be good points, salient points to help the story. So not only is that working at a design level, but you just got to admire them at the storytelling level.
Yeah, and it really does when you get to the end of that. I mean, there was a lot of things that I learned. You know, it was a useful information that really kind of prepared, not only prepared me for the movie, but gave me a lot more information. And I think that you know, it was really interesting, a mix of you know, obviously 2D and 3D, and you know, and the way it went back and forth. What I thought was interesting is the way it went back and forth from, you know, obviously 3D graphics to, you know, just the 2D illustrations. I thought my favorite one was when it comes from buildings and it pulls back up to oil. Does that sound familiar?
Yep, that's the from the petrol station one.
Yeah,
about halfway through. Yeah, no, that's a nice one. And you'd be interested to know, because I know that you've done it in the Pixel Core. It's Cinema 4D that did the 3D
Oh, really?
animation
Well,
on
and
it.
that's go
And
ahead.
I was going to say, and it was done in After Effects in Cinema 4D.
Right, and those are that pair when it comes to doing a lot of motion graphics. That's a pretty common pair. In the one thing that I've learned in the broadcast world is that Cinema 4D is about as popular as Maya is in the visual effects area. So it's very, very entrenched. So definitely coming from a design firm, we would definitely expect that, and all that stuff really it just really came together really, really well. So it's that was a real highlight, and I really felt like I was really in for a good movie. Now, well, once we got into the movie,
Well, actually, before you leave the titles, because I think there's a couple of other really interesting aspects about it that you wouldn't be aware of. Certainly, I wasn't when I first started researching it. They actually, to get some of that footage, had to directly deal with the Saudi royal family and directly, get permission from the Saudis to use it in the film.
sensitive.
And sorry.
Very sensitive.
Oh, absolutely. And full credit that they got all but one clip. There was one clip that they weren't allowed to use, and they tried so hard to get it. Yeah, so they did that, and they also had to negotiate things like CNN, because that some of the footage, I think about three quarters of the way through, there's some CNN footage, was an exclusive interview right after 9/11. So they had to negotiate all of that. But of course, the other thing that was kind of interesting is combining all those different formats, from 16 mil to almost poor quality video, right up to like high res stuff, and giving it some kind of a unified feel. I thought they did an excellent job.
No, it was one of the best. It's definitely one of the best opens I've seen in a while. And I think that I can't think of one that I thought was better.
Well, I would, if you'd have said to me what was the best opener prior to this, or what was the most graphics that you've seen recently, I'd have named the Bourne Ultimatum, which, guess what? Done by the same guys.
So their style is definitely taking off.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was like, when I found out they'd done that as well, I was like, now you're just showing off now, aren't
Yeah,
you?
exactly. Yeah, now that they and what's great is when you have a great designers like that, what you end up with is them getting more and more reins oftentimes to explore the medium. And we definitely benefit from that. So hopefully people will let them just keep on running, because they seem to be figuring it out pretty well.
Well, I believe I'm right in saying this, that the new Robert Redford film that's got a lot of pre-buzz, I think it's Lions for the Lambs. Yeah, I believe the scriptwriter on that is the same one as this, and I also believe the Pig guys are going to be doing the opening titles on that, and I think they got that directly from the work they did on this. So, yeah, no, I'm so keen to see what they come up with next. These guys are really kicking it.
Yeah, I mean, and just as a complete aside, I mean, one of the things that I always think is that, this is not quite as graphic, but this is where a lot of us are going to get a lot of information in the future. Not just for opens, but that highly visual way. It was amazing how much information you could absorb in 3 minutes that would have normally taken a lot longer. Now there's a lot to dig into after that, but anyways, when it's really packaged well and provided to you, it's pretty cool. So now once we get into the movie, who did the bulk of the work for this film?
It was Rhythm and Hughes in California, and it wasn't a huge effects film, obviously. Not in comparison to what Pirates or some of the other films we discussed in the past. But having said that, like some of the other films we've discussed, I think they did a pretty good, seamless job, and it didn't strike me as being effects heavy.
Yeah, I didn't feel it. How many shots were there?
I don't have an actual shot count right now. But basically, what they were doing was a lot of scenic scene work. Like, they were doing set extensions, matte paintings, this kind of stuff. There's obviously that last half hour is pretty action packed with stunts and explosives and
A lot of
stuff.
rotor.
Where do you think, I don't know if you've read this already, but if you haven't, assuming you haven't for a second, where do you think they shot most of that film?
Nevada.
Okay, well, I would have thought that a large amount of it actually was shot somewhere in the Middle East. And I looked at the end credits when they rolled, and I saw that there was credits for having, having had some location work done in the Middle East. So I naturally assumed that the majority of it was authentically done in the Middle East. In fact, most of it was at Arizona State University. And they only had 8 days in the Middle East to get some of those shots of the city, obviously.
Well, it's typically hard. I mean, we've had some issues where we've tried to, you know, pitch ideas of doing movies there, and it's just very hard to do a lot of those. A lot of the infrastructure that you think you're going to have, you don't, you know, and still you have, you know, especially a lot of the skill sets. You have people who have some of those skill sets, but they're not, they don't have the same pattern. And so when, you know, I think that becomes a big challenge when shooting overseas.
Were there any sequences or shots that really you thought were good?
You know, what I felt like is it was you know, for me it felt very seamless. You know, so I wouldn't say that there were a lot of effect shots that seemed that or effect sequences that really popped out for me. You know, I think that I knew that it was kind of one of those things, like when I was watching it, and I usually get to watch these twice before I see this, but when I was watching it, I didn't really feel like, and this is, I guess, what it should be, is I knew that there was compositing going on here, but I didn't, it was one of those things that I didn't, it was, you know, every once in a while I'd see an edge here and there, but that was about it. And for the most part, I thought it was very seamless. I didn't have anything that stood out dramatically, but, but most of it looked really, really good. Now, do you have specific breakdowns of some of the shots that we had there?
Not so much that. It's just that I guess for me that I've now got this new yardstick I developed from doing the VFX show, where I reckon if you can pull off a convincing interior car with exterior, you know, city going by, then it gets my tick of approval. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and that could be a you know, is equally a plane, right, with stuff going outside the windows. But it's just the thing that kills me is window replacements, getting the exposures wrong, it just looking sharp, but the window itself is soft, but the actor's sharp. Right. Like time and time again, stuff that involves just the simplest thing in one respect, which is just, you know, interior car shots and stuff. And when they had the interior car shots of this, which was both leading up to the explosion and, of course, the chase at the end, I just couldn't pick it. I was like, did they do this for real? Because right. It really was, I thought brilliant work. And generally, of course, the fact that I thought it was filmed much more heavily in the Middle East as opposed to being done in Arizona is testament to the fact that they...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing that I think is really interesting, and you know, a friend... of mine does a lot of, you know, a lot of that kind of set extension work, is that, you know, when you look at something like, you know, some of the work that Eric Chauvin has done from, you know, from Alias, you know, Alias is shot, you know, completely in LA or was shot when it was shot. Never on set. And just adding these little things. I mean, a lot of this matte painting work that's being done, I mean, some of it I'm sure was very intense and very extensive. But a lot of times it's just adding a minaret or adding a, you know, things that are off there that are going to completely, you know, tie you into that world very, very quickly. And it's amazing how just those little cues, you know, have you still believe that you're in the place that you should be.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that, because work done by Stargate Digital for their digital backlot for doing things like Heroes, which again, just like as you were saying with Alias, all shot in Los Angeles, and yet every episode's in New York or in Texas or somewhere else. It's pretty astounding. And while we're on that, I guess... kudos to the guys at Stargate Digital, because they got actually nominated three times four times this last year for them. They won for Nightmares in the Emmys, but they, for example, they did the matte painting and stuff on Grey's Anatomy. Now, I don't know if you saw that on iTunes. I know you don't have a telly, but and there was an episode where there was a huge ferry crash, right? And so they're obviously down at the water and big ferry crash. You knew that it was an effect shot. They obviously crashed a ferry. But what was really interesting is to pull it off, not only was looking that way towards the water in entire matte painting with just a giant green screen, but they put a green screen the other side and all of Seattle was a green screen. And it was literally like a corridor of green left and right. And you just shot anywhere you like down the corridor.
Right.
And then they'd put in either water one side or the city the other. And so that kind of digital backlot work, and especially, as you say, on episodic work where you've got such tight time frames, is astounding.
Right. And what's amazing, I think, is that, you know, I'm teaching a class right now in visual effects. And one of the things we'll be talking about is digital matte. And one of the things about it is that it's sometimes a lot of heavy work, but a lot of times what it is just replacing certain things. Now, that's a heavy green screen, what you're talking about there. But a lot of times it's just cutting stuff out. And for instance, you go around a curve, and instead of seeing more street, you see the Eiffel Tower. Now you're in Paris. You know, and a lot of this stuff, I think people don't realize how simple some of it is. Now, a lot of it's very complex, and it still takes an enormous amount of skill to kind of match all those pieces up. But it's something that I think a lot of filmmakers can use a lot more often than they do to make a lot of the stuff work a lot easier.
Yeah, it's funny you're teaching a class. I'm teaching classes too, completely separately. But yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, it doesn't take a lot. But of course, that's some of the skill of the artist, right? I mean, a weird anecdote. But I remember hearing once, I think it was an audio-only recording of Picasso speaking, right?
Right.
And it always just struck me as this is the ultimate kind of example of that of experience being coming down to simplicity. Somebody actually walked up to him in a restaurant and said, "Can I have your autograph?" You know, or something. And they shoved a serviette under him, and he sort of looked at them momentarily, and he reached down and he said, "Could you draw something, sir?" And he's like, And he said, "What?" And they said, "I don't know, anything." So he drew the wine glass, which was literally three pen strokes, right?
Right.
And they went to reach down to take it, and he said, "That'll be $20,000. And the guy went, "That took you 2 seconds." And he said, "Sir, that took me a lifetime to know how to do." Now, the right three strokes is a Picasso masterpiece, right? You know, three strokes from me is probably just a doodle, right? Point being that if you're, you know, it isn't necessarily, as you say, technical excellence that is there. It's sometimes just knowing what it takes to sell the shot and not, you know, hammering it. And it doesn't have to be a lot, as you say. It can just be removing a couple of skylines so that it's lower and then putting the Eiffel Tower out of, you know, the side of something, and it's going to sell the shot. And I think, you know, once you get obviously the color grading and stuff right, you can just believe that you're there. You don't need to have a whole lot of in-your-face stuff.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it was, and I thought that, you know, once again, they did it very, very well. I mean, I think that this is not an aggressive film. I think this is definitely a well put together film they had.
And I think it's in that same vein of, by the way, I'm noticing this also with the film companies. They're trying to not publicize that the visual effects in these films, like we saw with the Bond film, which were really low key on their effects,
right,
though there was quite a bit. Bourne Ultimatum as well. And to a certain extent, they tried it with Die Hard. But the studios are now concerned that if people know that it's got effects in it, that that'll somehow break the magic of it. But for me, that's not where it happens. These are believable stories.
Right.
I mean, I wanted to see this film because I thought it would be an interesting story. And it had an interesting premise. And full credit to Peter Berg, because I think it took him like 10 years from having the idea to actually getting the film made and getting someone to write the script and stuff.
A lot happened in 10 years, too.
Yeah, totally. But you know what I mean? Like, it's an engaging story,
yeah.
And then the effects are serving the script, and that's what we want. We want the effects to serve the script. I don't want to be sitting here, you know, picking apart and spending my time discussing visual effects of a film that, quite frankly, doesn't warrant the level of craftsmanship that the visual effects artists have given to it.
Yeah, and I it's really enjoyable for me to just feel like I can watch the film and not get pulled out of it, you know, all the time. You know, and it's hard. There are visual effects films that get done that I don't feel that way, but not many. and so I think that I do enjoy when they really key it down and have it go, you know, and just really use it to extend that film. But it also extend that feeling. It also just, you know, especially when you look at how much was shot in the U.S. and how it really did feel like it was. I mean, my guess was just that when I guessed it was Nevada, it was mostly practical. You know, this is the way you would do a desert shot, because you wouldn't want to. The big problem in from what I've been told, I don't have first person knowledge, is that in that area of the world, the sand is a real issue when it comes to equipment. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think they actually also had serious security risks,
right.
Because I think the State Department, I don't know, but I believe the State Department in the U.S. had issued, general warnings about traveling around the time that they were doing this. So clearly you're attracting attention to yourself.
It's never stopped me. So, yeah, but taking a bunch of crew.
With respect, it is slightly possible that Jamie Foxx has a bigger fan base than you. Now it's slightly possible he's going to pull a bigger crowd at
the State Department. What I meant is the State Department.
I'm just joking. Yeah,
there's a lot of that stuff out there, but it is, it's bringing a huge crew and dealing with the. I'm sure that the insurance and stuff that's required for any film, taking it over to somewhere like that, you know, is.
Oh, yeah, because you'd attract a huge amount of people. And, of course, you know, depending on which country you're in, of course, you know, like that can in of itself be, you know, some security risks. Hey, the other actor that I thought was really good in this, because I'm a huge Entourage fan, is Jeremy Piven, who plays Ari in Entourage.
I love him. Now I see.
Isn't he great?
I just love him in everything he does. So it's not, you know, I don't actually watch Entourage, but for me, his memorable thing is Gross Point Blank as the best friend.
Yep.
And
all time great film that.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my top 10. So, but he, you know, that's what I remember him as always, but in all the other stuff that you see him in, every time you see him, like, oh, he's going to be in the movie, it'll be good. And he did. Yeah. He did a great job, except for the hair. So I don't.
You know, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying this. I was watching a DVD the other night of Black Hawk Down, and I'm pretty sure he's the pilot in that as well. So he obviously is now very, very well known from Entourage. But yeah, definitely, he just sells every shot, and every film he's in, I just walk away believing that's what he's like. Do you know what I mean? Like he's such a good actor. I'm like, he better not do a really nasty, mean character, or, you know, because I'm going to believe he's like that.
Yeah. Don't.
Anyway, I digress.
Any other deep notes on this film?
I don't have a lot of other stuff. The guys at Rhythm and Hughes, actually, we're going to be talking to more and doing some stuff on FX Guide with, and that'll be coming in a little bit. I know that they obviously have a fairly proprietary pipeline at Rhythm and Hughes, though they did do some Inferno work and obviously Photoshop work for the matte paintings and stuff. But yeah, as I get more detailed stuff, I'll publish it.
And that'll be on FX Guide.
That'll be on FX Guide. Yep.
Great.
Though I'm gonna plug PhD right now, because we've just started a new term at PhD, which is going extremely well. We've it's good. We have I guess I shouldn't mention it because I'm going to get teased, but we obviously have a course on the RED camera, and so that's been great fun doing stuff with that. And I know you've been shooting with it at Kerner Optical, and we've been shooting with it at Animal Logic, so it's definitely really interesting filmmaking.
Yeah.
So, it's been good.
No, and we have a couple test plates, by the way, if people are listening. We'll try to get these up. If you go to, you know, https://members.pixelcore.com/pages/red_frames, you'll see just a handful, I mean, like four stills from the RED. We're going to put more stuff up for people to play with, but right now that's what's there. There's a bunch of other stuff that the members in the Pixel Core have that we haven't posted yet, but we're going to post more stuff for people to play with over the next couple of months. And we have, along with Mike, we have probably up to, within the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, we'll have 8 members that have RED camera, so we expect to do a lot of shooting, a lot of testing all over the world. So we'll keep
on. We're actually we've also got Stu doing the DV Rebel course with us this term, which is good.
Fantastic.
Very very cool. Stu's actually pretty much on location at the moment in the middle of the Midwest, I think. Yeah. It is. I'm not good on Albuquerque, exactly. John was just over there filming with him in Albuquerque. And so we're doing the DV Rebel, which is great fun for me, actually, because between that and the RED, I'm getting to do a lot of production. Because obviously we have flame courses, and we have, you know, smoke, and we have, Final Cut and Maya and all that kind of stuff. But that's all the post stuff, which obviously we've been doing now for a little while. It's great to be doing more of these production courses. Like, we've got stills photography as well as, you know, DV Rebel and that stuff. So it's fun.
Yeah, no.
I'm having a ball, but I'm not actually in darkened rooms much. I'm out on location getting, you know, I mean, it's a new thing for me, out in the sun.
So. Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat right now. And so it's fun. It's been an interesting process for us, because for me, it's been really coming from a post-production background to doing a lot more production and kind of being in the middle of all of that. And so, which I, you know, I enjoy a great deal. So, still
it is fun, isn't it? It's fun to do production stuff.
Yeah, and I complain a lot less about people who give me bad plates, because.
Yeah, that's true. But mind you, I'm so intolerant of people complaining about post-production being boring, because sitting around on set waiting for something, oh my God, new definition. It's boredom without wireless.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely a, you definitely have, you know, the process and patience, but I do notice that when I get stuff now, you know, when I make mistakes now, or I, you know, have to rush something through or have to get it done. Now I know why I get all those plates that I didn't, you know, that I'd complain about, was because, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that happens. You know, production has a certain amount of inertia, you know, that you have to.
That's true, isn't it? It's like a a train wreck that's about to happen, and you're either going to film it or you're not,
Right.
but you're not going to stop the train wreck from happening.
Exactly.
So just get the cameras out, and if it's not the perfect thing, my God, we've got to get it because the sun is going, and for the love of God, we've got everyone here today and we can't come back tomorrow. And
And so much of the best plates that we use for samples in the Pixel Core and everything else, I always think it's funny because a lot of the stuff that we use over and over and over again for training and over and over and over again for samples were stuff that we did off the cuff. You know, we were in a rush and we just kind of turned the camera on and we grabbed some stuff. And next thing we know, that's what we're using. We have all this other stuff we shot, but this is the stuff that, you know, becomes the standard of what we're doing. So you never know when it's gonna fall into your lap. So.
We wanted to shoot some bad. I mean, we've completely digressed. I know, down a rat hole, but we wanted to shoot bad green screen for Red to test it, right? And it was the hardest thing in the world to get this DOP, who's a great guy, Tom, to shoot bad. And he was like, "No, we'll stop." I'm like, "No, leave it overexposed. We want to see that." And he's like, "No." And I'm like, "Trust me, we really want it bad." And he's like, "But what?" I said, "Well, we got to test it. If we just do perfect green screens, we're not really pushing it through its paces."
Right.
And he's like, "You sure you won't let me just?" And I'm like, "No, really, for the love of God, you have to like just let go." And he was like, "Just don't tell anyone I did this."
Well, I mean, the some of the plates that we have up there on the Pixel Core site, you know, we shoot about 1 to 2 hours of 950 footage green screen a week on average, and for us, everything's about labor. You know, about how much time it's going to take us to do this. And these aren't like big effect shots. I mean, this is really bread and butter work that this is constantly coming through. And so, but we are very, very particular about the green screen. And like, you know, there's very little variance and it's perfect green and there's almost zero red and blue, and it's a very specific way we do it. And I have to admit, I mean, we have generally good keys, but the keys that we pulled with the I don't know, you saw that stuff that we put up there, while the focus might be a little soft on it or whatever, the keys that we pulled on one click with the red, wow, you know, it was stunning.
Yeah, no, totally.
And
I don't know if you've cottoned on to some of the tricks as well with the green screen keying, but some of the stuff we're covering in the class, for example, because you get the raw files off the sensor, not only are you actually doing the demosaicing in software, which is, you know, what you expect to do, of course, but you're also doing the matrixing. So try doing those keys with the matrixing switched off, because the whole point of a digital camera like that is the frequency response to RGB is actually quite separate compared to, say, film or your eye, which has quite a lot of crosstalk between the colors. So turn the matrixing button off, and you get this green spike that sits really well separated from the red or the blue at frequency response level. So if you think it keys well on Rec 709 with the default settings, you hit a couple of buttons, and oh my God, we were just like jaw-dropping. It was so
Well, I'll
good.
definitely check it out, because right now we have, I mean, from the, you know, when we bring the footage in, when we look at it, you know, on our little scopes internally, you know, we're at 90% green and zero on black, on red and blue, and it's just like, you know, we just kind of touched it, and it was like done. You know, every little hair, every little piece. It was, you know, it's really, we're really happy with it. So, I mean, it's.
Yeah, I mean, you have a big discussion about technical stuff to do with mosaicing and stuff, but of course, you can't get past the fact that when all is said and done, you're also keying this stuff without any film grain. Like, I put up some 16 mil, and I was like, "Oh my God, look at the blue channel! It's just like a snowstorm."
And well, and look at, if people go up and grab some of these frames, we have one. We were just showing off after a while. I mean, we have one with Adjua with her hair, you know, just standing there. But we also have her pouring water in front of the green screen. And when you pull that key, you get all the little semi-transparencies within the water, and there's, look at it, and there's just, yeah, there's not, you don't have any grain. You know,
Yeah,
it's
it's amazing.
really, really, and I was, you know, I have to admit that I was skeptical until I got to actually play with the camera, but it's very, very impressive. So,
Yes, I should fess up. I've been teasing Alex, and especially Kenji, behind the scenes over Red for a while now. So I was glad to hear that you
Well, we
were
talked it
pleased when you tested
in
it.
TWiM, we talked it into the ground, you know, for a while, you know, and
Now, don't get me started on that. I don't want to get started on that. I'm going to get into a whole like thing over John and his blind spot.
no, we
Let's just agree that you've righted the wrong.
Well, the thing is that I just decided I wasn't going to talk about it a lot until I had one, until we had shot plates with it. You know, I just wanted to have like something real that I could look at. And now that I've seen it, I'm like, okay, put me on the list. I think that, I'm hoping to be number
Alex, the weekend that I was shooting constantly with the camera, you guys put up a thing where you made one remark about the red coming out,
there.
And then you spent 20 minutes. No, you were talking about the red rock micro thingy on it. And I was like, dude, that's when I started laying into Kenji. Like, you were doing that, man. And I was like laying into Kenji behind the scenes, just going, shame, shame, shame. He was like, I wanted to talk. They wouldn't let me.
It was sitting in the office, and the red wasn't. I had a red. I just got confused between the colors.
Okay.
Red Rock Micro, which was really fun, and that's what I had to
learn. Sure.
Yeah. Now I have
my red. Bicycle's really nice next to my. Okay. Anyway, changing the subject back to VFX. Hopefully, we'll get back to doing some more of these shows a bit more frequently.
Yes. I'm ready.
But I'm gonna have to go because I gotta go film something.
Well, there you go.
So it's been terrific talking to you. Thank you so much.
And until later, keep it real.